Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 56, recorded Wednesday, August 15th, 2007. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on today's Travel Commons Podcast: lines around the world and travel tech, trying to slim down. Well, this week, coming to you today from the San Francisco Airport Marriott, back to my old haunt after a month's absence. However, I don't think I'll be back here for a while. The SFO Marriott, I mean, not San Francisco. They're doing a huge renovation here. The lobby is completely shut down. The front desk is in a trailer in the parking lot. Now, I'm sure that I'll appreciate the investment when it's finished, but no, I think I'm going to hang out elsewhere while the construction dust is still in the air. July and August have seen some heavy travel for me, both business and personal. And if you'll indulge me just for a little bit, let me sort of quickly walk you through my life as an airborne ping pong ball. Things started to get out of control, really even before the last Travel Commons episode. The week before that episode, the July 4th week, my dad slipped on a tile floor in a condo in San Jose del Cabo, Mexico, and had to be medevaced to San Diego for a hip replacement. Now, you know, he was ready to be discharged that weekend, but the doctors wouldn't let him fly back home to Denver. So, 6:40 a.m. that Saturday, I was on the first flight out, a Southwest flight from Chicago to San Diego, grabbed a Chrysler minivan at Thrifty, because my usual Avis and Hertz, neither of them had what I needed, and ended up driving my mom, my dad, my sister, and her daughter the 1,100 miles from San Diego to Denver. Actually, it didn't go that bad. I mean, other than the fact that I'm driving a Chrysler minivan across the country. I mean, at one point we were joking that this was going to be a little bit like the Little Miss Sunshine movie, except when we started figuring out who was who, and I started looking like looking like I was going to be the suicidal gay uncle. Well, at that point, the metaphor, the analogy sort of broke down. But anyhow, other than that, we only really had a few obstacles. The brush fire in western Utah closed I-15, the road we were taking, and then holiday traffic coming out of the Rockies, coming from, say, Breckenridge, going on I-70 down to Denver, made the last 40 miles of the trip a two-hour stop-and-go nightmare, and so ended up really compressing the time I had. I ended up dropping everyone off at my folks' house and then sprinted to Denver Airport to catch the last flight out Sunday night for San Francisco. After a Monday of client meetings in San Francisco, I flew across the country that Tuesday from San Jose, California to Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina. And actually, I was in the middle of that jaunt when I recorded the last podcast in Chapel Hill. Then, that weekend, at 1:30 Sunday morning, to be exact, I took my son on Chicago's Late Ride, which is a 25-mile bike ride through the city very early Sunday morning. We really humped it, and actually I was back in bed by 4:30 a.m. Sunday morning, which was a good thing because that night I was on a 6 p.m. United flight to Amsterdam, which ended up being the start of my city-a-day tour through Europe. Monday Amsterdam, Tuesday London, Wednesday Frankfurt, Thursday back to Amsterdam, Friday Paris, Saturday afternoon I flew back to Chicago and a dinner out with my friends, with some friends that had been set up the month prior. I tell you, I was proud that I managed to keep my face out of my meal. So the next week, I stayed home, recovering. But then the following week, I was coast to coast again, starting the week in New York and ending it in San Diego. Feeling, at the end of that, not quite burnt out, but certainly a little crispy around the edges. I was happy for the week's vacation we had scheduled for the following week, just this last week, in northern Michigan, though it did end with a 6.5-hour drive Saturday night from the Mackinac Bridge, which is the bridge that spans the Mackinac Strait between the upper and lower peninsula of Michigan. It's a 6.5-hour drive Sunday night from the Mackinac Bridge to Chicago. This week, I'm back on the road with seemingly an easy week, just a single trip out here to San Francisco. You know your perspective has been warped just a bit, when a 4.5 hour flight across 2 time zones is just a minor hop. So following up, in our last episode, Daniel Perez of the Gamer Traveler podcast wrote in about seeing U.S. TSA agents in Amsterdam Schiphol Airport and wondered if anyone else had seen this. And I'll tell you, during my couple of passes through Schiphol last month, I actually saw no orange TSA patches. However, Alan Liu of the Geography for Travelers podcast has seen them elsewhere. He says, I've seen TSA or TSA-trained personnel in Hong Kong. At least twice while flying from Hong Kong to the U.S. in the past few years, the planes were specifically located at gates at the far end of the air terminal, and special additional security screening was required for all passengers. It felt much more like a U.S. screening process than what passengers went through to enter the gate area of the airport. At least one of these flights, maybe both, was on United. It may be that this only happened in Hong Kong. I really can't recall seeing it elsewhere. And it was not on every flight that I took from Hong Kong to the U.S. I did not go to Hong Kong this year, and I had no such special screening in July this year flying on China Southern Airways from Guangzhou, China to LAX. Well, Alan, thanks for that quick note. You know, actually, in the same note, Alan also said that he's posted a couple of pictures from his hotel rooms in Kuala Lumpur and in Guangzhou to the Views From Here photo stream in Flickr, that photo stream we talked about in the last episode. Actually, I've also added a couple of shots from my European trip, a view of the Rhine from my room in Mainz, Germany, from the Hilton Mainz, or the Mainz Hilton, and a great little bar in Haarlem in the Netherlands, and also the view of the fire escape from my room in the Paris Renaissance Hotel that my caused my colleague to comment, "What a rat hole. I thought you had status in this place." Gotta love those platinum benefits. Anyhow, I'll put a link to the Views From Here Flickr stream in the show notes. Thanks again to everyone who contributes their thoughts and stories, the voice of the traveler. The email address is comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or you can post them at the website at travelcommons.com. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is lines around the world. You know, in Travel Commons number 54, we talked about the depths to which the travel experience in the U.S. has fallen. To be specific, the flying experience. Now, this has become something of the travel topic du jour this summer. Seems like you can't crack open a copy of USA Today without seeing some, you know, horror story about travelers stranded somewhere or another. But it shouldn't be surprising. I mean, really, there's no slack. There's no safety margin left in the system. Airlines are constraining capacity, driving high passenger loads, trying to counteract fuel costs by maximizing the utilization of their aging plane fleets. And airports and air traffic space are completely maxed out during peak times. But I'll tell you, that's cold comfort when you're sitting on the tarmac for 2 hours waiting on FAA flow control hold for, say, O'Hare or LaGuardia. However, during my City a Day tour of Europe, I actually had the opportunity to do a firsthand comparison of the European air travel experience to the U.S. experience. And, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, my itinerary gave me a pretty broad sample. Monday morning, I landed in Amsterdam. Monday night, I flew EasyJet to London Gatwick. Tuesday night, British Air from London Heathrow to Frankfurt. Wednesday afternoon, back to Amsterdam on KLM. Thursday, sick and tired of airports, I took the train from Amsterdam to Paris via Brussels. But Saturday, I was back in the airport, Paris Charles de Gaulle to Chicago O'Hare on United. Now again, in Travel Commons number 54, we talked about the TSA lines. You know, an unstatused flyer in the U.S., that is somebody not traveling first class, and not holding some sort of precious metal frequent flyer card, it's probably looking at a 50-50 chance of hitting at least a 15-minute, if not a 20-minute wait for your TSA encounter. Now, I didn't see these same sort of security lines in Europe, but they were replaced by even longer luggage check-in lines. Now, here's the problem. The same luggage kit that allows me to carry on in the U.S., and that is, a computer bag and a wheeled 22-inch suitcase, what would normally allow me to go straight from the door, straight through security, this same kit shunted me to the check-in line for half my European flights. EasyJet and British Airways only allow one bag. This makes the security lines absolutely go quicker, but I'll tell you, that was little comfort when I was standing in a 50, that's 5-0, check-in line for EasyJet and Schiphol. Once at the security screening station, the Europeans seem to have, some different fetishes than the U.S. TSA screeners. While the TSA in the U.S. has a foot fetish, they want to examine everybody's shoes, the Europeans have something about belts. I never take my belt off in the U.S., but every airport in Europe wanted to x-ray my belt. It's nothing special, just something I picked up at the Gap here in San Francisco probably about a year ago when I forgot my other belt at home. I'm really not sure which takes more time at the other end of the metal detector, retying my shoes or rethreading my belt. I don't know. Maybe it's lack of practice, but every time I manage to miss one belt loop. The most interesting screening experience, though, was at Schiphol. I don't think I set off the metal detector, but I was waved over for a secondary search, a full body pat down. Now, I get these sometimes in the U.S. too, and it's really not that much of a bother. And I don't have an argument with the case for doing random secondaries. I really don't. I can understand it. So, pulled over here in Schiphol, I just assumed the usual position. Arms out, legs slightly spread, and was ready for the pat down. What I wasn't ready for was the intensity of the physical contact. In the U.S., it's, a quick light brush over the arms, legs, and torso. In Schiphol, the guy clamped down on my wrist and ankles and actually was putting some pretty serious wrinkles in my slacks. A little disconcerting, but, not too much of a problem. What got my attention, though, was when he moved from my left leg to my right, transiting the region between these two appendages. He took just as firm a hand in patting down my, how do I say this without getting an explicit tag in iTunes, patting down my manhood. I mean, I don't get that sort of attention even in San Francisco. Once on the plane, though, things typically went smoother than in the U.S. I only had one flight delay, again in Schiphol, but it was for good reason. Right after we'd boarded our EasyJet flight, the skies opened up and it poured. I mean, the skies were green. If I'd been in Arkansas instead of Amsterdam, I would have been looking for a tornado. And EasyJet handled the delay in the right way. They immediately started the drink service while we were waiting. The only other delay was my United flight back home on Saturday, and I think our plane was late getting in from O'Hare, and I don't think the ground staff could handle two wide-body departures, ours and a flight to Washington Dulles at the same time. We ended up leaving about an hour late, but we arrived O'Hare on time, and at the end of the day, that's what really counts. But back at the airports, I wasn't done with the lines. My itinerary had me in a different country each day, so I faced immigration lines on each of my trips before I could pick up my luggage. Now, as a non-EU citizen, I was relegated to the slow lane. but I was traveling with a Belgian national who could use the EU Express line, and even for him, there were 10-minute queues at Gatwick and Frankfurt. And you know, having said that, I guess these immigration queues, these passport control queues, gave the baggage claim guys time to do their work because the wait for my checked luggage was just a fraction of what it usually is in the U.S. So at the end of it, which was the better travel experience, the U.S. or Europe? You know, you end up spending more time in lines in Europe, in the European airports, but much fewer flight delays once you're on the plane. I found the European gate agents and security screeners less polite on whole, especially in Schiphol, where I kind of had that, you know, personal, a little bit too much personal interaction in various parts of my body with the screener. But, you know, I'll tell you, the airplanes were in better shape and the in-flight service was much nicer. I think the European experience was better, but not by as large of a margin as I would have expected. That being said, on Thursday, given the choice of a one-hour flight or a five-hour train ride between Amsterdam and Paris, I didn't hesitate for a second. I took the train. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is travel tech, trying to slim down. Ed Vauder sent me a pointer to the latest episode of his Searching the Internet podcast. In this episode, Ed focuses on mobile search sites that are designed to be accessed from your smartphone or your PDA. Ed's note reminded me of my continuous quest for a way to travel PC-less. At least on short trips. You know, I've already trimmed my PC down as far as I can. I use a ThinkPad X60S. It's a small 3.5-pound laptop with just a 12-inch screen and no DVD or CD drive. Lenovo describes it as designed for extremely mobile users who spend most of their time working away from the office. Yep, that would be me. But, you know, I don't know if I'm getting old or got too much paper stuffed in my briefcase, but I still find myself using my 22-inch wheeled bag, even on just overnight trips, even if, you know, for no other reason than to avoid heaving my computer bag over my shoulder. And no, I cannot go with the wheeled computer bag. I mean, some of my colleagues use them, but I'm sorry, it looks like they're taking their bags out for a walk on a leash. I just can't do it. No, I'm looking to eliminate the PC entirely. Again, at least for overnight or one or two night trips. Now, if all I need to do is keep an eye on email, I'm already there. My vacation last summer in Sweden and this spring in South Africa, all I used was my T-Mobile BlackBerry, and that GSM BlackBerry nailed up on the local edge network without a hassle, and I was easily able to check messages and shoot back a quick reply when needed. Indeed, with the native Google Maps application installed, it's even more useful. When I was in Paris a few weeks back, that Friday night, I was on my own for dinner, and after a city a day, I was a bit tired, burnt out, pick your adjective there, to look hard for a good place for dinner. And, you know, I was getting ready to settle for one of those tourist spots off of Rue de Rivoli for lack of any better idea and lack of energy to go searching for something else. I happened to be trading emails on my BlackBerry with a colleague in Boston and mentioned in passing that I was in Paris. Her next note told me that I just had to try Chez Georges for dinner. It was a favorite of her and her husband's. Sounds good, but I don't know if it's anywhere near where I am, so I fire up Google Maps. I'm in luck. It's a 10-minute walk from where I am. I call them up, book a table, and head out following the path suggested by Google. I sit down, still trading messages. You ordered the ratatouille starter, my colleague wrote. Very healthy, but make sure you order the cheese plate for dessert. The camembert alone is worth it. Well, thanks to my BlackBerry and my colleagues 6 time zones away, I had a great dinner. And she was right about the camembert. But still, the BlackBerry is not a complete answer. Web browsing is a bit problematic, and while there are a growing number of websites designed specifically for mobile devices, and Ed's podcast reviews a number of them, there's still a minority. And for regular websites, the BlackBerry browser or the Opera mini browser that I use in my 3G Samsung phone, well, they're just a bit hit or miss, especially with some of the newer, trendier sites using Ajax or Flash technology to provide the full Web 2.0 experience. The iPhone's more full-featured sort of Safari browser should do better, but you know, without Flash or Java support, which the iPhone doesn't have, it still won't be a complete PC substitute. 2 years ago, what I expect will be the next generation, kind of, you know, generation 2 iPhone, one that runs on the faster 3G wireless network instead of the slower Edge network, one that supports Flash and Java plugins and has native support for the BlackBerry Enterprise server, so you get that synchronization with corporate Exchange servers, and actually has an easy way to swap SIM cards. 2 years ago, that would be the perfect solution. And indeed, it may be enough today for Europe and for the Northeast Corridor in the U.S. where, you know, you've got good train service. However, for the rest of us in the U.S. who are dependent upon an air travel system that has rapidly deteriorated, amazingly rapidly deteriorated, to kind of third world levels. I mean, you know, for some routes, and I'm kind of picking on O'Hare to LaGuardia, I mean, why post a time? Just put an AM or a PM up there and shoot for the best. Well, given this, what the propeller heads, what the IT guys would call a use case, the use case has changed. The significant probability of a 2-hour flight delay means that you want something with you that you can do real work with. You know, edit or create Word or Excel or PowerPoint documents, pound out some long emails without getting carpal tunnel syndrome of the thumb. In short, you still need a PC because there's a damn good chance you're going to be sitting there doing nothing. So while Google and Yahoo and MSN are rolling out better mobile sites, there'll be nothing but weekend toys for me until O'Hare and LaGuardia and Newark and Washington National get unclogged, you know, some 10 years from now. I think I'm damned to keep lugging around my PC. Okay, that's it. That's the End of Travel Commons podcast number 56. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. Even more, I hope you decide to tell someone else to subscribe to it. The bridge music on today's show is from the IOTA PromoNet. The songs Moving Forward by Bittersweet, Scratch to Win by Tikla, and Une Rose Noire. My French doesn't go anywhere past a menu, so I've probably botched this. Anyhow, Une Rose Noire by Paul Cargnello. Again, for the proper, so be able to read it so you can give the proper pronunciation, check out the show notes for links. And always, remember, if you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or MP3 file to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, or post them at our website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who's taken the time to send in emails, audio files, or post comments on the website. Well, I'm back to my transcontinental ways next week, flying from New York to San Francisco back out here on Wednesday. So I'm going to try out the new Virgin America service that launched the beginning of last month. They're actually headquartered out here in San Francisco. There's a bunch of flyers or banners on the light posts in the city of San Francisco saying, welcome to our new hometown airline. So I'm going to give that a try. That ought to be interesting. I was always a big fan of Virgin Atlantic when I was doing a lot of travel from O'Hare to London. pre-9/11 when Virgin Atlantic first launched that service. They've actually just re-entered that market. But I was always a big fan of them, so I'm going to be interested to see what this new service is like. And, you know, maybe I'll do a quick JetBlue versus Virgin America comparison in the next podcast. And until then, safe travels. Thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Take care. Bye now.
Life is hell, strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing needs my mind, the warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling, crying into the phone, within my heart you find